All right, you guys are listening to Sober Life Radio, Rochester Free Radio, WRFZ LP in Rochester. That was Prison Song by System of a Down, and we picked that specifically for our guest that we have in studio today, Billy Shaw. We'll be talking to him momentarily. It is just me here today. Joel is out of town, unfortunately. He had a death in the family. We're going to try to get him to do a call-in. Not guest hosting, but call him, but we're having some technical difficulties right now, so he might be joining us later. Joel, if you're listening, hi, we miss you.
What's up, Joel?
We also have Austin here, Billy's son. Hi, Austin.
Hello.
So, I think we're just going to get right into this, because this is a very special show for me. I've been friends with Billy for more years than I'd like to admit, just because that makes me feel really old, but we've been friends for over 20 years. And he's got quite an interesting story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good,
definitely.
A lot of bad.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
You're a fighter.
Yeah, so, I'd say more a survivor than a fighter.
Survivor, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I gave up fighting.
There you go. Actually, that just brings up another memory. Maybe we'll get to talk about that at some point. The Korn concert in the hallway of the War Memorial, you and a friend of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about that one.
Actually, maybe why don't we just get into it right now since we're talking about it. You mentioned previously being a fighter. I'll never forget a show at, was like the War Memorial back in the day. That's what it was called.
Yeah, it was Ozzy, Korn, the Ramones, and Sick of It All.
Well, and a friend of ours had this crazy hair where it was like shaved, but there were squares, and the squares were spiked up. And I look over, and some dude is trying to set his hair on fire.
And I flipped out.
Yeah, next thing you know, I'm watching somebody literally get beat down in a hallway.
Well, the whole story, I mean, the guy that was doing that, I pulled him down off the rafter, and that he was like all apologetic, and then some random drunk dude grabbed a hold of our friend.
Yeah.
And then he grabbed a hold of me, and we're both going, yo, you need to let go of us. And dude, just, you know, he had the googly eyes, his eyes were all over, wasn't comprehending to let go. And our friend just cocked him, and he went down. I just got on top of him. Our friend was kicking him. I was bashing him in the face. And the funniest part, though, is the dude, you know, after like 2 minutes of this beatdown, he gets up, takes his jacket off, stands up like he's going to come at us.
That I remember, yeah.
And his girlfriend finally, or the woman in his life, finally got in front of him like, what are you doing? And it's like, the best part was when we came back in, the two Asian guys, they were like,
see, I don't remember that. Yeah.
Oh, they were like, oh, you guys are kick ass. You guys are kick ass.
I just remember standing there with my friend Kim, and we're just looking on like, this is crazy. And that's just the very beginning of Billy and I's friendship. So.
Yes, that really was at the beginning. I mean, it's crazy. This whole scene that we were in. Amazing people that we were around. It's just unfortunately I chose to go a different path. Mm-hmm. I think every one of us sometimes struggles with different things in our life.
For sure.
And you know, I was always looking for a way out. And I thought, you know, drugs had been the answer. Obviously not.
In that time frame, that was so significant for me. Like, that was really formative, like, in my development as a person, what was going on. And again, good and bad. I made some lifetime friends, and I also went through a lot of really bad things because of that scene.
Like we were talking just before we came, we can go ahead and start with that. I was introduced to you through your friend Kim, who, you know, started dating one of our friends, and another mutual friend of ours was Trey, who, rest in peace, he's no longer with us, neither is Kim.
I know, it's crazy.
I know it is kind of crazy. The people we've lost, and not necessarily to, you know.
Right, directly to addiction,
right,
but lifestyle or other people's addictions,
You know, I mean, I still pretty much remember that night that, you know, you decided you wanted to hang out with me and Trey, and I guess see what we were all involved in. And,
yeah.
That night was just crazy because, I mean, you know, I introduced you to a certain substance and, you know, and things happened and we ended up getting ripped off and, you know, I tried to run the dude over and it was already a crazy night. And then you went, you know what I mean? Then we ended up, you know,
committing a pretty big crime.
Yeah, we did it. We chose to do, well, it was the first of many for me, unfortunately. You know, but we got involved in something, and you know, in a way, I kind of maybe in a way I was hoping maybe that whole dramatic thing would have maybe turned you away, but
right.
You know, I was definitely caught up, you know, and wasn't thinking correctly. I mean, here I'm bringing, you know, a minor at the time.
Yeah, I was 16 when we first met. You were 26.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was not my first introduction to drugs, but my first introduction to hard drugs.
Right.
And it turned into an absolutely insane night. And that just really speaks to addiction, because we won't get into like a war story. We won't get into great detail, but the very first time I did, it was crack cocaine. The very first time I did crack cocaine, it resulted in just a series of events that was out of control, very dangerous, very illegal. And, it set Billy off on a chain of events. Now, when did you start using drugs, Billy?
I started in 1984. Actually, it was New Year's Eve, 1984. It was a great night, I thought. I smoked weed for the first time and lost my virginity in 1984. So,
how old were you in 84?
14 years old. I was 14 years old. But I really got to say that, you know, I had the behaviors of being an addict long before I ever picked a substance up. I was already manipulating people. I was already stealing stuff.
Right.
At 7 years old, I got in trouble in elementary school for standing behind school buses. Me and a friend of mine were standing behind the buses, you know, inhaling the exhaust.
Wow.
So at an early, early age, I was already trying to escape who I was or who I was becoming. And that just set off the whole chain of events of, you know, that led me to sitting here with you now. It's insane in the sense that, you know, they say insanity is doing the same thing over and over. Well, to me, insanity is picking up a certain substance, knowing exactly where it's going to take me,
right.
And I still do it, convincing myself that it won't happen this time.
Right.
And, I have no control once I put a substance in me, especially certain substances that, I mean, I could chop my head off and my body's just going to do it without me.
Right.
So it's just been, a crazy, crazy journey, but like you said, it hasn't been all bad.
Right.
I mean, the people we were involved with at that time are still some of my best friends, dearest friends I have. They've actually, you know, they had to kind of walk away from me. They kind of distanced themselves from me because I'd be on the scene and then I would just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd be back on the scene and I would disappear. And, you know, you can't rely on somebody that's right. disappearing.
See, and this is going to be an interesting show for me too, because, you know, I was one of those people. I didn't intentionally make a decision to distance myself from you, but over the years, you know, our paths separated, we went different ways and we would come back together, and then, like you said, you would disappear. So while I know your story, I don't really know your story. You know, what I knew was, you know, being a naive 16-year-old and meeting you and doing drugs for the hard drugs for the first time and the craziness of that. And then somewhere shortly after that, I went my own way with different substances and went to a whole different level of hell. And you did too. And all I remember is being in my late teens and hearing like, oh, you know, Billy's in the psych ward. Or I remember a letter that you wrote to a friend of ours, and it was like in crayon or marker or something.
Probably.
And you had been psychiatrically hospitalized.
Yeah, that might have been around the time when I did. I mean, you
this
weren't a teenager.
This would have been like late 90s, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, the 90s are kind of, in a way, difficult for me to remember.
Right.
I mean, I do remember, like, the times that I would stay clean, and as far as staying clean at that time was, you know, I wasn't doing hard drugs, but, you know, and being involved with our friends. You know, I remember a lot of them, but there's chunks of my life that are really just
gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a scary feeling waking up in jail in a paper gown and not knowing how you got to jail, not knowing how you got your clothes off. I've had, unfortunately, a few of those experiences, and this is without alcohol. This is strictly, I mean, I drink occasionally, but I prefer, you know, drugs, but they had the same effect. I still was going into like blackouts because one thing I've done my whole life has been like an extremist. Everything I've ever touched or put my hands on, I've done to the extreme. Even with our friends and stuff, you know, with that association, I tried to do anything and everything I could. But that was part of my character defect too, though, because I always felt like I didn't fit in. So I'd always try to do everything I could to please everybody else. Mm-hmm. But by pleasing everybody else, I never took care of me.
Right.
That's nobody's fault. You know, that's just something, that's just the way I was at the time. I mean, I've had some incredible, just like you still have, we have some incredible people in our lives that are just amazing people. And I mean, now I can see, I would consider myself an amazing person when I'm off any kind of substances,
and,
obviously.
And you are, and that's something that's always stood out to me too, because going back to when we first met, again, you know, you're dealing with a 16-year-old girl, and most of my friends at the time were men in their 20s.
Right.
And you were always the most respectable. You never once made me feel uncomfortable. You never once pressured, nothing. Like, it wasn't like that. You were always kind. And I remember that night, just how upset you were.
Yeah.
That, how concerned you were for me. Like, we shouldn't have done this. We shouldn't have given this to you. And, you know, here I am like, it's okay. It's okay. But you were kind. And I dealt with a lot of really crappy people over the years, a lot of really terrible and shady men that tried to, or that did take advantage of me, and you were not one of those people. So you've always been a genuinely kind and caring guy, and that's why, you know, it's so sad to have seen what you went through over the years. A large portion of your story is the consequences that you suffered because of your use.
Yeah.
You spent quite a bit of time in prison, correct?
Yeah, the longest period was from 2001 to 2008. And one of our mutual friends, that was one of the things he just couldn't understand, is when I walked out after doing that amount of time, it was a very short amount of time before I ended up going back to you know, one of my substance of choice. And it just blew his mind. Like, how could I just do 7 years of incarceration?
Right.
But the thing is, though, is while I was incarcerating, I did absolutely nothing to better myself. I stayed pretty much high the whole time I was in there. I got along really well with COs and people, and I did a lot of work, so they pretty much left me alone, so I wasn't getting consequences. So, you know, I did absolutely nothing to change my perception, to change the way I felt about the world or myself. So it was like I never really stopped, even in that 7 years. I just wasn't using hard
stuff. You just changed locations, basically. You're just doing what you were doing on the inside.
But, I mean, prison, believe it or not, prison did teach me a lot. I mean, I did 8 months in solitary confinement, and you get to know yourself kind of pretty well when you're stuck in a cell by yourself.
Was that during that long bed that you
did? Yeah, I did. I did 8 months in solitary confinement, and, you know, if it wasn't for books, I probably would have drove myself absolutely crazy. But I read a lot, which in a way helped me, because it taught me how to, like, slow down and just actually, you know, sit still for a minute. Unfortunately, I didn't go use it to my advantage when I got out. I used it while I was in there to get through it. Like I said, even if I didn't do anything for that whole 7 years, I really believe I would have came out and still ended up doing what I did, because, like I said, I'd made absolutely no effort to change anything. If anything, I became more like anti-authority, more like, you know, felt worse about myself, because here I am, you know, I'm now a convicted felon and gone to prison.
Right.
And, you know, so it didn't help my self-esteem or my confidence, which was already whacked before I even went to prison. You know, that's, I think, one of the saddest things about addiction is I don't think when we're in active addiction, we don't realize, like, what we do to ourselves and the people around us. You know, I've always said, well, I'm only hurting myself, but really I hurt everybody that was within my reach.
Right. And I'm gonna pause you for a second, because I'm sitting across the table from your son, and we were talking about, you know, like the 90s and the late 90s, and that basically being a blur for you. And that was the time that you were born. Austin, what year were you born? 97. Mm-hmm. So that was, things were out of control.
Pretty much prime.
Right. Yeah. And then you went to prison in 2001. Yeah. And so how old were you in 2001?
I was four.
You were four. Yeah. And you got out when you were?
11.
Yeah, 11.
Almost 12.
Yeah, almost 12.
That was my first birthday party that I could
give. The whole time he had been in prison, I didn't really remember anything. I mean, my grandma, two Christmases ago, let me know like the memories that I thought I never had, she let me remember them because I just didn't remember the time before he went to prison.
Yeah.
I was four. I'm surprised I still have memories of hanging out with him, but then he just kind of disappeared.
Right.
And nobody ever really told me what happened to him, where he went. I mean, I lived with my grandparents. Which
so you didn't know he was in prison at first when you were a kid?
For the first, like, 5 years, not really. I mean, I would have his mom, my other grandma. I lived with my mother's grandparents, right. Parents, who were my grandparents. And all they had to say about him was that he was a piece of garbage.
Crap, yeah.
And he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I would rebel against them because I didn't know that he went for, you know, armed robbery or drugs.
Right.
I didn't see that. I didn't, you know, and that struck anger and a lot of issues in my life, especially in school. Like, I took out my anger on teachers and other kids, and I didn't want to cooperate with anyone.
Right.
And that's what started my downward spiral. I mean, I'm currently struggling with probation and rehab, and I mean, I don't do any hard drugs anymore. I just smoke weed, but.
How old are you right now?
I'm 19. I'm going to be 20 in March.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. I mean.
Yeah, time flies, man.
It's when crazy. He left a year ago, I mean, I was not doing any better than him. I mean, I brought him downtown to get him hard narcotics.
Right.
While on the other hand, I was sitting there. I mean, before that, I had just met my girlfriend. Before her, I didn't know where I was.
Right.
I mean, I was taking 38 pills a day and just not caring. But unlike my father, I hit jail and I was like, no.
You're right.
I hit jail and I was like, he was right. He can keep doing the time for us. He's got enough time for both of us. Like,
see,
I don't want
that terrified me. Like, the first time I heard that you had legal issues, I'm like, please let this not go the way that.
And that goes to show you, though, because, you know, I always told him when you come see me incarcerated and stuff, that this is a place for, you know, not necessarily bad people. There are some bad people in there, but a lot of people in there have, for doing bad things, and this is not a place. But what the message I really gave him was, it's okay, because I kept going back to jail.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know what I mean? So even though I was telling him it's not a good place, you don't want to come here.
Right.
My actions are saying, but it can't be that bad.
Right.
I
don't
keep
do
going
drugs.
Back.
Don't
just
get
like
in trouble.
Drugs.
But I'm going to do drugs.
Like,
and get
that's what drove me. I mean, I never got into crack or anything, but I've tried it twice. And the only reason that I ever had the thought of trying crack cocaine was because of my father and why he kept running to it and not helping me in life.
Right.
I would try it. I just tried it, and I was. I didn't see anything special with it. I really didn't.
How does that feel for you hearing? I mean, you knew that he tried crack cocaine
before? You know,
I called him the day after.
Well, his
right
friend
after.
Tried to tell him it was something else. But
he tried to tell me it was a smokable Molly.
It's kind of weird now because it's like I'm a parent. I'm in recovery. I have a son that.
He's gonna be
struggling
at
the moment.
Still in recovery right now. I go to outpatient
in
groups.
Well, you're in treatment.
Yeah,
but you know, one of the haunting memories I have with my son is at one point we did, you know, smoke weed together, which as a parent, it's a weird feeling to know. You know, I justified it by saying, well, I'd rather have him smoking with me because then I know where he is, what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But you know, at one point, you know. I had him with me, and we were with a mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pretty high on cocaine, and you know I wanted more. And this particular friend was like, "Well, you know, I'll give you more if you let your son do a line.
If your son wants a line, I can have a line,
I could continue to use."
So the person that you were with said that they would do more, but only if you were to do some too.
It was up to me.
They were going to give me more if my son would do a line.
It was my choice. Nobody
was
like,
it wasn't for
no, nobody.
And here and you know, because I was under the influence, I looked at my son and said, "It's up to you."
And I had already done it before.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first time
but still,
I had done it.
I mean, it's one thing knowing my son has done different drugs.
Right.
It's a different thing when
you do it with me.
I'm partaking
in
them.
Those kind of drugs are screwed. I don't know about the I can't get into the marijuana. I can't.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
We don't have to get into that.
But when
that.
It comes to that, if you were sitting there doing lines of cocaine with me, but it was once.
Well, but what I'm saying, I was trying to get to, you know, as a father and being caught up at that particular moment. I've really thought about it now that I've been, you know, clean for a few 24 hours. And it's like how that just shows you how powerful addiction can be, because any type of love or caringness I had about my son definitely is thrown out the window when I'm using, because here I am, you were, I think, 15.
I was like 14, 15 in that area. Right.
And without a hesitation, I was like, because all I wanted was more, and if that was my way of getting more, I was willing to sacrifice my son in a sense.
And I completely understood. I mean, not at that time I didn't, but right now I understand why I would have done anything to get high too when I was in that state of mind. And I understand.
And I think that's so important to address, because I don't have children, but I have done, in my active addiction, I definitely was around some children and did some things that I shouldn't have done, you know, in their presence or with them in the same household and whatnot. But I think that people get slammed for decisions that they make in regards to their children when they're under the influence. I mean, what was it? Several months ago, that thing was going around where the parents overdosed in the car with the kid in the background.
And
the things
Facebook.
People were saying, and yes, I get that. That's a terrible thing to put a kid through. It's a terrible thing for Austin, for you to have been through. But that's, people don't understand. That's how strong addiction is. And the pull of addiction, it makes you a different person. It biologically, chemically, it changes something in your brain the minute you do it. Right. And you are, like I said, one of the most loving, genuine, kind, and caring people I know.
Not when he's on drugs.
I'm a complete animal when I'm on.
One of the things I would hear through the grapevine was, you know, when you would be back on the scene and then you would disappear, and then I would hear, oh, you know, well, he stole from my kid's piggy bank. He did this, he did that. And you know, and so that hearing all this is new to me, but I just think it's very interesting because, you know, obviously I'm quick to be like, you know, why would parents use drugs with their kids? I think that's terrible. But on the other hand, I understand the addiction, and there's things I did.
I mean, he taught me a lot too. Like, he taught me how to not like be, I don't know, a drug addict, so to speak. I was never like an addict for a specific, I just like to get high. I would do any drug that would get me out of reality. I didn't care what it was. I didn't have crack was his main drug. That's what he needed. I never got into that bad. I just would, you could come up to me with anything and I would get it and I would do it, and I didn't care. I was doing cans of Duster.
You were that kid that they'd just be like, hey, do this, it'll screw you up, and you're like, sure, it'll kill me, I'll do it.
Literally. I mean, I recently have people telling me that they didn't think I was gonna live until the age I'm at, 20 years old. I have people telling me they didn't believe I was gonna make it to this old, and I probably wouldn't have if I stayed on the path I was on, but I just got to jail, got out, did a couple more drugs, and I was like, this isn't, it got to the point I would look at pills in my hand and start puking. I can't walk through Wegmans pharmacy without like getting the shivers, because the feeling of taking that many pills and then hitting your stomach, it just would do something. It would just make you like twitch a certain way, and I can't do it. I don't want to do it. I'm sick of drugs and narcotics. It's just ruined a lot of, especially heroin. That's a very touchy, too many people.
Unfortunately, you know, I mean, that's what I ended up, that was really, they ended up being the drug of my choice at the end.
You didn't do it for that, though. You did it because you got hit by a car and you didn't have insurance to get painkillers and the correct help. So I understand why you chose heroin. Sure, it wasn't a good decision, but if I just got hit by a car and landed on the curb with my head, I would be putting something in my system to be taking away the pain, too. I don't care who you are. Heroin was just the easiest option for you, and then it led to addiction because
I was already an addict.
And now you're just picking, physically addicted, it's over. It's just, and you just had to do it, which the sickness and all that. I brought you to get it before, too, and the only reason I brought you to get it is because I didn't want to watch you sit there and pee blood and talk about and go through what you were telling me you would go through if you didn't have it. It's like, I'd rather just get you the drugs, let you be okay until you have to go.
Well, that's kind of like how Grandma dealt with me, too. My mom and his grandmother, you know, she would just give in to me 90% of the time because she just, it was easier to give in.
Than to fight it. I mean, that's what my grandparents did with me. They just stopped caring, stopped telling me. They just let me go. My grandma said she put it in the Lord's hands, and she just let me go. She just let me go.
You know, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I had another son back in 94.
Yeah.
Well, he's back in my life. It's amazing because I always told Austin, you know, he had this brother and, you know.
I never thought I would see him or talk to him. I haven't seen him yet physically.
And thankfully for social media, the adopted mom reached out to me. And actually, I was, you know, sitting in front of a fellowship, about to go into this, a certain fellowship I was going to go into. And, you know, I get this video of this kid, and I'm thinking, oh, somebody screwed up, sent me the wrong thing. And then I get this long paragraph of explaining who it is. He's 22. He lives in Florida. He's in school to become a paramedic. And it blows my mind, like, how similar both my sons are to me.
Right.
I mean, but yeah, I did not have a hand in his life at all.
Right, right. This is like nature versus nurture, and this is the nature aspect of how similar your children are. Right. And they didn't even grow up in the same state. They never even met each other.
In a completely different atmosphere versus what my father did. I mean, my grandparents were completely against him, but I turned out just like him to start with.
Yeah. Like, it's so interesting,
what
too.
What they tried.
This is, like I said early on, you know, despite knowing Billy and knowing Austin and knowing some of their stories, some of this is new information for me. And what I love is that this is just kind of off the cuff right now. For those of you that are listening, we're just sitting here having a conversation. This is real life. This is reality. This is a father and a son just chatting about this. So I hope it gives people that are listening some insight into what it is like being an active addiction, what it's like being the child of someone that's an active addiction and someone who has kind of has stepped foot in his father's shoes, but then walked out of those footsteps.
It's
just really interesting, you know, and I hope that this helps people judge less, because until you've actually been in some of these situations, it's really hard to judge people and to throw stones because I mean, is this like an ideal father-son relationship for this to have happened and for them to have used together and for Austin to have seen the things he's seen and for Billy to have been through the pain he's been through watching his son go through some things? You know, no, that's not ideal, but this is life. This is reality, and this is what happened because of addiction.
I wouldn't have asked for anything else.
Yeah, and that's so evident talking to you guys. You know, despite some of the anger that I know that you've had towards your father, I mean, you voiced that to me in the past years ago. You've been honest about it. You care for him, you love him, and I can see you. It comes out in like, and this isn't a bad thing, but it comes out in like, you know, defending him in a way, but that comes from love, and you love him.
I mean, no matter what he does, I'll always be there. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, that doesn't matter what he's done. He's still my dad. He might have robbed your dad, but he's still my dad.
Yeah. And like, he may have. Yeah, he probably did.
He's still my father. I'll still be there to hide him and deal with his actions, but I don't know. I got to the point with my father, too, that I just had to stop caring, so to speak. I mean, it wasn't about stop caring. It just, I was hurting myself more so than anything. I would beat myself up a lot. It was part of my anger issues. It was my father. I mean, I just didn't understand that until I went through it. And, you know, the addiction caught up with me, and I started doing drugs that
got some more insight, personal insight.
Yeah, but.
Oh. And unfortunately, about, you know, as far as, you know, the stigma about addiction and stuff, it's people that have never actually had to deal with a problem of addiction, it's really, you know, you can't explain to somebody how addiction feels or what addiction does to you.
Right.
And I think that's part of the awareness thing that, you know, that I'm kind of big on is you can't.
You'd be addicted to anything.
Yeah. Well, anything. That too, you can't, you're right.
I mean, I didn't think I was addicted to weed, but here I am struggling to quit it, and I can't even quit it on my own.
Right.
Like, I tried, it's to the point I'm being told by PO and the people I love that I need to go away.
Right.
To just stop weed. I thought I had issues with other drugs, and I mean, I just can't. I physically and mentally do not want to quit weed.
Right.
I mean, and it's another... You know, the argument of it's illegal and all that, but right now, the sole fact is weed is causing issues in my life, and I just need to stop, and I can't by myself, so people try to tell me all the time it's not addictive. I mean, anything can physically...
Anything,
you can be addicted to
coffee. Look at people that are addicted to food.
Literally, anything.
People that are addicted to exercise, and that's healthy.
But they don't look
at
it like that, because it's not a drug you're putting in your system.
It's not affecting their life in a negative way.
Well, and that's where judgments come into play.
The only reason people have an issue with drugs, and like this, I forgot who it was recently, somebody was bringing up to me about the heroin overdoses that... They're coming into like Webster.
Right.
I live in Webster, and people are overdosing in gas stations.
Yep.
And people are just now realizing that, it's such an issue. And the only reason it's an issue is because they brought it into your town and
your backyard.
That if it stayed in the inner city or in the hood or anywhere else,
from the mouths of babes, and this is literally so true.
And it's the only reason it's a problem is because needles are starting to show up on your streets and your.
And it's not just the bad kids anymore. Nah, they're used everybody, drugs to everybody.
And unfortunately, you know, where I am, where I currently live and stuff is in Baltimore, and it's insane in Baltimore. I mean, I just recently had three friends within 2 weeks OD.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of them almost had, you know, 2 years clean and went out one time, and it's all it takes now is one time.
Right.
And that, in a way, that's motivation for me, too, though, because it kind of scares the crap out of me because... Yeah. One time and it's over.
It's done. Well, we're gonna go to break in a second. We're gonna play a couple songs, and there's songs that Billy has handpicked that are meaningful and important to him. When we come back, I want to hear. Well, we're gonna come back. We're gonna try to get Joel on because Joel's gonna want to talk to you guys a little bit. So hopefully that will work. But regardless, I want to talk to you a little bit about how you got clean. You know, we've talked about the use and the impact that it's had. I'd like to hear what's going on now. What's different than last time?
Absolutely.
And maybe even a little bit about your idea at prison reform, because you've talked about that. You know, obviously you did quite a long bit, and you were using the whole time you were there. So that'd be interesting to talk about, too.
Suboxone's the big one right now.
Oh, don't even get me started.
we can touch on that.
Yeah. And if not, we'll bring you back another time, because that's a whole other show, too.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to break right now, and we'll catch you in a few minutes. All right, welcome back, Sober Life Radio. You heard The Fighter by In This Moment and I by Taproot. Those were songs that were handpicked by our guest, Billy Shaw. We were unable to get Joel on the air. Like I said, Joel's out of town, but that's okay. Again, we miss you, Joel, and we wish you were here, but we'll see you next week. If you guys are just tuning in, we've spent a lot of time talking to Billy and his son, Austin, about the insanity of addiction and the consequences of Billy's addiction and how that impacted his son, Austin. So I think right now it's kind of important. We'll talk about, you know, how Billy got to where he is today, because this is a different Billy than I've ever known. So welcome back, guys, and I'll let you take it from the insanity of addiction and the consequences of addiction to how you got to where you are now.
All right. Well, you know, my clean date is June 22nd, 2015. And what happened was I had committed a pretty serious crime in Maryland, in Baltimore, and I decided to come back to New York, you know, to run, basically.
Right.
And I knew I had a minor warrant here in New York. So my, you know, sick thinking was I'd come up here, take care of this little warrant, and, you know, the mess down there in Baltimore would just go away. So I came up here and I tried to detox. What I mean, I lasted 4 days and then literally begged my mother to bring me to Rochester so that I could not be sick.
Right.
And then I got a hold I ended up coming and spending some time with my son and ended up staying here in Rochester for that weekend. And the Sunday before the Monday that I turned myself in, I ended up getting a hold of a really good friend of mine, Steven Rosa, who used to be a sponsor for me back in 08, and told him, you know, he was like, "You got a place to go?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Well, come stay with me." And I was like, "Well, you know, I'm going to turn myself in tomorrow." And he's like, "All right, man, I'll take you." And I'm like, "All right, cool." So that was the plan. And then Monday came around and I still had some money in my pocket.
Right.
And, you know, turning myself in at that morning kind of went right out the window, which I think he kind of expected that, because he wasn't surprised when I said, I don't think I'm going to do that. So I ended up, you know, going and continuing to use and, you know, make a long story short with that day is I ended up, everybody I'm sure in Rochester anyways is familiar with the St. Paul Park there right by High Falls.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so I ended up there totally, absolutely, totally by myself. For some reason, not a soul was even walking around me. And, you know, I had to come to a decision in my life. I mean, I thought I'd been at crossroads before in my life, but I sat there and I'm just looking up at this guy and I'm just like, what do? I either, you know, continue to find means and ways to continue what I was doing then and there, or I really do man up and turn myself in and just stop doing this. And So I called up Stephen again and said, you know, man, I'm sitting here in this park and I absolutely do not know what to do. And he's like, do you want me to come and get you? And I was like, yeah, you're going to have to physically like hold my hand and walk me into jail. Right. And that's what he did for me. So that was the last day I used. So I consider my clean date to be June 23rd because that was the first day that I didn't. And it was pretty insane because I went through pretty, if anybody out there has been through withdrawals, jail is definitely not the place you want to go because they do not do anything to help you. You know, I got to the point where I was, you know, urinating blood. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sleep for the first 40 days I was in jail. And it was just insane. But I truly made that decision that day that this was it. In the past, I've always said, well, yeah, this is it. But I still had reservation or whatever you want to call them. You know, I still thought I'd still be able to smoke weed or, you know, at one point I'd be all right. But I know for me, I can't touch anything because anything is going to set me off to getting what I really want, which is, you know, and once I start those, I literally lose control. I do not have control over what I'm about to do. And, you know, over these years, my consequences and the actions that I was doing have gotten a lot worse. Like you said, you know, I become a different person. I become the exact opposite. I don't care who you are, you know, if you're in my way of getting high, I'm pushing through.
Right.
And by any means necessary. So anyways, you know, I ended up doing this crime. So I ended up going back down 3 days after, because I thought, you know, it'll take them a little bit of time. 3 days after turning myself in here in Monroe County, you know, the judge was like, well, you got a little bit of a mess down there. So, you know, it took them, they extradited me back down to Maryland. And I ended up getting 8 years all suspended, but 18 months, and I'm on probation now. And that is amazing. That just shows that I have a higher power working in my life because they should have smashed me.
Right.
Even though it was my first crime in Maryland, you know, my record, unfortunately, goes all the way back to 1988.
Right. Well, and how much time have you spent total, would you say, out of jail and prison?
Probably close to 16 years altogether. Okay. The longest stretch, like I said, was 7 straight, and then, you know, I did multiple skid bids, we called them, in county jail.
Yeah.
This last one, I was in jail for 13 months, 17 days. But I started doing what I needed to do this time. I didn't continue to get high while I was incarcerated. I started attending meetings on a regular basis. You know, I just had finally had enough, you know, to kind of go sidetracked. I mean, the biggest thing, at least in Baltimore right now, is Suboxone. It is out of control in the jail or prison system. But I stayed away from that. You know, I did a lot of reading. I tried to read stuff that would, you know, educate me. I started going to meetings. And plus, I think I just finally made that. You know, it's one thing to make the decision to stop using in your head. It's different when you make it in your soul and in your heart. That's it. I don't want to live like this anymore. Just like now, I have absolutely no excuse in the world to go back to active addiction unless I just decide I don't want to live clean.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, if my mom passed away or even my son, for some reason, she passed away, that's not an excuse. That'd be the worst way to honor.
Right.
You know, it would be the worst way to honor people that I love. You know, when I got out this time, I did exactly what I was suggested in the fellowship I go to. You know, there's certain suggestions that became rules for me, though. Mm-hmm. I no longer, you know, one of my biggest things is I always knew, you know, I always thought I knew what was right for me to do.
Right.
And if I'm saying it's right for me, it's probably the worst idea in the world because my best thinking got me, you know, pretty much where I am today.
Right.
But, you know, I got a sponsor. I go to meetings on a regular basis. I have a home group that I'm active in. You know, I draw, you know, I pray when I wake up. I pray when I go to bed. My higher power has definitely proved to me over and over and over again that he's got my back. So, you know, if you're struggling with the God issue, man, it doesn't, you know, it's whatever you think it is. That's why it says your understanding,
right.
You know, which brings a lot of freedom. Because when I first, you know, got clean, I was like, you know, God is not going to forgive me. I've done so much crazy, destructive things that there's no way God is going to forgive me. And it's like, you know what? He does.
He does.
You know what I mean? And that's the amazing, at this being clean, like, see, I'm really starting to understand what being clean is. It's one thing to be abstinence from drugs. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different thing to be clean, because you, when they say you got to change everything, I really truly believe it means like you got to change the way you feel about yourself, how you perceive yourself, because the, you know, the better you perceive yourself and accept you, like, acceptance is the key. I really want to get that tattooed on me, believe it or not, because the more accepting I am of myself and of the faults that I might have, the more accepting I am of the world around me, which really, boy, it takes stress and worry. Well, like,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It really just takes it down a notch.
Right.
You know, I wake up every day now and it's like, I don't have to run. I don't have to run for me. I don't have to run to get another one. I don't have to run from the world.
Right.
You know, I
can meet an old friend up. We're going to go to lunch after this. We're going to go hang out with some old friends. And
tonight is going to be off the hook. Yes. I don't know if we're allowed to.
Yeah, you can talk about that.
All right. Well, you know, Hate Machine. Hate Machine, which is really what brought us together. Yes. Well, other than, you know, well, yeah, that's really what brought
us. Yeah, that whole crew.
Tonight is 23 years of them being together, and it's a reunion show, and it's like, it's just, that's what's amazing about this whole thing, though, is I'm sitting here with you, you know what I mean, and completely in a right mind for a change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just, I can't wait to rock.
It's great. And both, it is, like I said, this is a meaningful show for me, because Billy and I both, and Austin too, I mean, we could be dead right now, for sure. Oh, yeah. We've had many close calls. Yeah. Yes, everyone's in agreement. We have had close calls. We could be dead right now. We could all certainly be in prison right now, all three of us, from things in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not. And, you know, in this moment, right now, right here, you know, at 10:54, it is because we are living a different lifestyle than we were at some point in the past. And we get to enjoy this, and we get to enjoy each other, and we get to enjoy
life.
What brought us together years ago. Too, all that's BS aside, like the drugs and the craziness and the insanity and the all that stuff, what brought us together was friends and music and combined mutual interests.
The
craziness
and insanity will always be there, though.
I
gotta let that be.
You got a couple shout outs you want to do, and then I'll do a couple shout outs because I know we're getting close.
Yeah, we got a few minutes
my
left.
My girlfriend Alex and my grandparents always, and the people I live with, Jason and Candace Quartz. I just appreciate them all.
And I appreciate you too, because you guys, you know, it's what are they, that cheesy saying, you know, it takes a village, you know, to help raise somebody. But, you know, you're here because of some people that have stepped in and helped out.
And I wouldn't have asked for any other lifestyle. Yeah. I really wouldn't have. I'm glad I grew up with a drug addict of a father. As terrible as it sounds.
No, it makes sense.
I mean, it's terrible, but I couldn't see myself being in a normal state of parents and all that good stuff. It's the truth.
Yeah.
And I really got to thank, you know, like you and, you know, I got to say his name, Jed, Donnie, because since Austin's been in their life, they've never turned their backs
out. Never. Donnie's never always turned, been there for me.
They might have had to walk away from me. They might have had to walk away from me, but, you know, I just
got
to do a couple quick shout outs.
No, do it. We still
got a minute. I got a shout out to Alice. I got a shout out to all the people I live with, you know, Amanda, Bradley, James. Oh, man. My names are crap. I'm forgetting names right now. If I forget to shout you out, it's not because I don't love you. It's just because I'm...
He's on the spot.
Yeah. But to everybody that's really in my life right now, you know, Mike V, who drove down here with me, who's a, you know, a fellow metalhead and was willing to drive down here to see the show. And, you know, just everybody that's amazing in my life, my parents. I mean, without my parents, I would definitely not be here.
Yeah.
You know, and you definitely, I mean, it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine what the next 10 years are going to bring us.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on. And I have a feeling, not just I have a feeling, this is not going to be the last that you guys hear of Billy and Austin, because we're going to have you guys back on. What we talked about today was just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. And there's so much more that,
like,
we can talk about.
A smidge of everything.
Yeah, there's so much more we can talk about. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on that relationship, you know, like the father-son relationship and addiction and the prison reform. And we always run out of time on this show because there's just so much we can talk about. But again, thank you guys for being on. And Hate Machine for life.
Yes, sir. It's on my leg. It's for life.